Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Tuesday, February 19th, 2019. This is our fourth of five cases on our oral calendar for today. It's A18-1800, State of Minnesota versus Ronald Dale Owens et al. Please be seated, counsel. You will have 15 minutes for initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent for your arguments, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. When you approach the podium, please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Paul Eng. I represent Dr. Laura Boltman. With me today is Elizabeth Duell on behalf of Ronald Owens. I'll be presenting the argument for both parties.
Okay, thank you.
This here, this is a question that is presented that has vexed the parties for a couple years now. It has been certified as important and doubtful, and it is whether or not the transfer of cannabis oil between two sister corporations, which are commonly held by employees authorized to do so, violates the statute charge 15233. The statute is designed to punish the distribution or transfer of marijuana, cannabis marijuana, medical marijuana to patients who shouldn't get it, or a caregiver who's unlicensed, or...
But the statute defines it as intentionally transferring it to a person.
That's correct.
A person includes a corporation.
That's correct.
Okay.
And the question is whether the transfer here authorized by two corporations is a transfer from one hand of the corporation to the other when they're both jointly owned.
I think the question is whether or not these two separate subsidiaries are each a person. Isn't that the issue?
Well, the question is whether they are one person. Clearly, a corporation is a person. That's true under the statute. The question is, under Copperweld and various corporate law doctrines, which we'd like to discuss with you, these corporations are merged for our purposes into a single person. Go ahead.
Isn't the starting point for our analysis, though, the plain language of the statute?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
And the statute prohibits the transfer by a manufacturer to a person other than a patient, a registered designated carrier, or if listed on the registry, a parent, legal guardian of a patient. So the question here is whether the transfer to the New York subsidiary was a transfer to a person, correct?
Well, the question is whether it's a transfer to the same person as a practical matter of law. That's the question. I mean, what we're trying to show here is that the transfer was intra-corporate.
Let's step back. I mean, you're not disputing the language itself in the
Oh, of course not. No,
so but there's no claim that's ambiguous. It prohibits a transfer to a person.
Correct.
So
correct.
The only issue then is whether or not these two subsidiaries are each of them individually a person, or are they, quote unquote, the same person?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Can I ask one related question?
Sure.
Just following. Getting back to the plain language, do you agree that the New York subsidiary is a person within the meaning of the statute?
Yes, that it would be a person, but it is the same person under Copperweld. I mean, the whole conundrum here, if we want to look at the plain meaning of the statute, has been answered by the legislature after this case was charged.
What do you think the underlying purpose is in the statute?
The underlying purpose is that, first of all, is to facilitate the manufacture of medicinal cannabis. That's the underlying purpose of the statute, and to authorize manufacture of that drug because it is helpful to people with chronic disease.
But in Minnesota, correct?
In Minnesota, that's correct. But there is an ambiguity, or there was an ambiguity in the statute that has been since corrected, and that is in Subdivision 1, which was passed, 1A, which was passed after the alleged crime occurred here, clarifying the statute of what a manufacturer in Minnesota could or could not do and what could be transferred in and out of state. And the legislature in 2017 answered the conundrum of this case in 1A2 by saying you can no longer transfer anything outside of Minnesota. It was not clear before that happened.
Well, isn't part of the underlying purpose of the statute, though, is to for the state to exercise some control over this very heavily regulated industry?
Oh, absolutely. I agree.
And to the extent that a parent company who may have sister companies in multiple states, I mean, obviously, wouldn't that interfere with that intent of the legislature that this be heavily regulated if, in fact, a parent company can sell to any company, any sister or subsidiary company throughout the nation?
Well, I don't think it's quite, the problem here is not that general. I would agree that we can't be in a position of transferring cannabis willy-nilly to anybody. I think if we step back here, though, for the sake of context, and the statute is evaluated in the context of what was happening.
Are you trying to pierce the corporate veil here? I'm not sure what your argument is, because you agree that each of these two companies are persons within the meaning of the statute, correct?
They are the same person. Okay, that's Copperwell.
But individually, they're.
But they are in Copperwell, you take, and it has been applied
right,
to sister corporations.
But Copperwell is specific to antitrust, the Sherman Act.
It has been expanded. Go ahead.
And the cases that you cite to, those are all antitrust cases as well.
Well, I disagree with that. I mean, it has been expanded to non-antitrust context. And that one of the cases I do cite is the Foggy decision from the Eighth Circuit, which applied Copperwell to a RICO statute, which is a criminal statute. It's not a criminal case. I was error in brief, but the Foggy is a RICO case, and Copperwell applied to a criminal statute. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Isn't the issue that RICO is trying to address very different than the issue that the statute is trying to address?
Well, the RICO is a separate law, but it is a joint enterprise. The RICO conspiracy is similar to an antitrust conspiracy.
Exactly, and I think that's the issue that I have, is those two are trying to solve a very, very similar problem. Here, all we're looking at is whether or not they're, according to the plain language of the statute, it was whether or not somebody intentionally transfers medical cannabis to basically another person. And under textbook law, when you've got two subsidiaries, well, let me back up. Okay, so you've got a parent company,
right?
And you've got two subsidiaries,
right?
Subsidiaries are owned 100% by the parent company,
right?
Correct. But one of the subsidiaries is based in Minnesota, the other subsidiary is based in New York, correct?
Right.
And they have separate principal places of business,
correct?
They have separate articles of incorporation,
as they had to have.
And they have separate boards of directors. Now, I understand that there's some issue in terms of some overlap in terms of who sits on the boards. But in terms of they have separate boards of directors, they have meetings that are held separately from each other, right? And they make decisions. They have separate suppliers. They have separate contracts that they enter into with different parties. So given all of that, how can we say that they are the same person under the law?
Well, the distinctions you're drawing, I believe, in all due respect, are artificial here. I mean,
are
artificial.
Artificial?
Because the companies are owned by the same people.
I understand
the medical
that.
Director is the same for each company. She owns stock in each company, and the director of security works for each company in the same capacity. He's also the owner. So they are, in a sense, one in the same for each corporation. I would direct your to answer your question to this two company idea. I would direct us to Judge Model's order, where she says, look, I find that the employees were not agents of the corporation. As a factual issue, I find that they could have been rogue employees, but had they not been rogue employees and had they not been acting independently and were agents, I may have well decided this case under Copperwell differently. And here we are now with a concession by the state within the question presented that these two individuals were acting under authority of these corporations to the common corporate goal of each. And it's different. They are not disparate people.
Right, but
I understand your argument, counsel, but here we're talking about a highly regulated industry, and medical marijuana is not uniformly regulated in every state. And my guess is, I haven't done a complete survey, but my guess is there's still some states that don't allow medical marijuana. Maybe you can tell me.
Some, but we've listed everyone that has.
But you would agree it's a highly regulated area.
Of course.
And yeah. So given that the state decided to authorize medical marijuana, isn't it logical to expect that the state, to the extent it was going to authorize an exception for subsidiaries that are owned by the same parent, that would have expressly been provided for in the language of the statute?
Well, I disagree. This was when this law was passed, the frontier, if I may use that word, of medical cannabis was just opening up. And most of the statutes and most of the states were enacting these statutes, kind of trying to figure out how to do this. And one of the, if I may continue, one of the things that happened is that you have to have a separate company in each state to satisfy the statutory rubrics of each state. But you can share personnel and you can share the investment acumen on each one. And that's what happened here. There's an umbrella that's owned in part by Dr. Baldwin and two separate companies, but they're actually one and the same.
And the language of the statute on its face seems very clear that medical cannabis can only be transferred to certain people, persons, and a subsidiary is not listed in that in the list of exceptions.
No, and it's ambiguous because this type of behavior, which was authorized by the companies, doesn't fall strictly within the statute. And now it does, though.
Companies isn't really relevant to our analysis. What's relevant is the language of the statute.
No, what's relevant is that the transfer was authorized by the companies. And once you have...
How is that relevant to the statute, though?
Well, no, once you have an authorized transaction by employees who can do it, then of shared companies, they can't, by law, conspire with themselves. They became a singular person. And the whole...
You're referencing, though, the antitrust laws, and that's
well, I'm Refoghi, and I'm representing the Howard versus Timberwolves case.
Where you've got a different issue that's trying to be addressed. And I mean, I agree with Judge Cochran. When you look at the plain language of the statute, and you acknowledge initially that it's not ambiguous, although it seems like you're starting to argue it's ambiguous, but I don't understand how these two entities, these two subsidiaries, can't be considered two different persons. You even mentioned that, you know, you need to have two separate companies.
Right.
And I listed out a number of factors that you look at. I mean, I was in-house counsel for 12 years at Cargill. We had subsidiaries, some wholly owned, some partially owned, and those were separate entities, and those were considered separate entities, and the case law seems to be pretty clear that that is a person, unless there's an exception that applies. I understand your argument on the antitrust and RICO, but I guess my question ultimately is can you point to any case law other than the exceptions for a RICO claim or a Sherman Act claim where two separate entities, two separate subsidiaries of a company that have separate articles of incorporation, two separate principal places of business, two separate sets of bylaws, two separate sets of boards, that those are not each individually a quote-unquote person?
Well, I would cite Judge Doty's district court memorandum, which goes along. It's very long and detailed, and he cites the Hood decision, which is the Southern Circuit, and he holds in that decision in plain language that sister corporations can be one and the same.
Can be,
of course, and they are here. they are here by virtue of the nature of that question.
In any way designed to address conspiracy?
I'm sorry, I missed the first. I interrupted you.
The cases that you're relying on are primarily concerned with conspiracy among corporations, corporate entities. Does this statute in any way address that issue?
Well, it doesn't...
That's why I'm having that trouble making the jump from the cases you're relying on to this statute. I don't see how this statute in any way is comparable to the statutory language that was being interpreted in those other cases.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you. It is, when we had this case that came in, we consulted corporate law lawyers as to whether this transfer between companies were solely owned would be a transfer to one person. And the answer we kept getting back was, look at Copperweld. Look at Copperweld by analogy. Obviously, it's not antitrust. We never had an antitrust case. But it does give us some kind of rubric or framework.
Well, except the underlying purpose of the statute is to control what's happening with the subject company.
The underlying purpose of the statute is not to permit delivery to people who don't need it. That's
it goes further than that, because they define person as corporations.
Right.
And so it makes some sense if you look at the underlying purpose of regulation. You don't want somebody setting up a Minnesota corporation and then setting up 50. Other corporations in all 50 states and distributing cannabis oil to all of those 50 other companies, right?
Not unless they're jointly owned. No.
Well,
no.
If it's the same people. What? I mean, wouldn't that be a way for someone who's running who has a company in Minnesota to avoid this regulation of the state by setting up all these sister corporations if we adopt your rationale here?
Well, the reality is that there are only a couple to begin with, and if you had 50, the reality is you can't have 50 corporations, because then you'd be running afoul of the federal law, which prohibits the distribution of marijuana. And the reason we have all these state court companies...
What, I mean, here we just have two, but what if we had 4, 5, 6, 50?
Well, I dare say...
Sister corporations... But as long as it's the same people involved in each corporation, then you're going to say that's one person?
Well, I dare
Does
say
that
this.
Make any sense?
I dare say this will never happen again. I mean, the headache and heartache. I mean, she's risking her medical license on this. He's risking his law enforcement license on a statute that was brand new. It will never happen again, and it can't happen again because we have subdivision A. So the issue is for the newness of the statute and the confusion of how to structure this and how to share your resources. And Dr. Bolden happens to be an expert with cannabis in the treatment of cannabis.
Counsel, you're already over time, so okay. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal
as
well.
Thank you.
Good morning or afternoon, depending on what time it is. My name is Shane Simons. I'm here on behalf of Respondent, Wright County Attorney's Office, State of Minnesota. Your Honors, I don't want to essentially repeat my memorandum. I think it digs into the areas sufficiently in terms of most of the explanations, but there's a few things I do want to focus on. One, I understand, in terms of these particular appellants, defendants, that it will not happen again. According to Mr. Ang, I understand that claim, rings true. But if his argument is adopted regarding transferring the Copperweld doctrine to this statute and situation, this will certainly happen again. It's like an efficient breach of contract. Okay, well, you're going to hit us for a quarter of $1 million, maybe pull our license in Minnesota. But if our business in New York can survive and thrive and maybe make up for that loss, because that's what we needed to do, well, certainly a corporation is going to have to consider that and decide whether the law is going to be violated again.
Well, do you understand the underlying policy for the legislature in adopting the statute and applying it to corporations, the transfer of cannabis oil to other corporations?
Yes, I think it's simply strictly prohibited. Even the idea is...
But why? I mean, what's the rationale? Why is it prohibited?
Because if you don't prohibit it, all of a sudden you have the corporations deciding what regulations are going to follow or what regulations even exist. I spend a lot of time talking about 29 subdivision 1. That lists limits on where you can process and harvest and manufacture, cultivate. 4 distribution sites are your limit, and you have to register those distribution sites essentially when you're signing up with the state of Minnesota. And so if the Copperwell Doctrine was applied here, essentially as long as it's to a sister, I'll call it a sister corporation, related corporation, those regulations would have no meaning. And those regulations are important because the state has every right and interest in knowing exactly what is being grown, how much is being grown, exactly where it is at all times, where are the plants, where are the oils, the pills, and other things, because it's a controlled substance. As Mr. Ang even talked about, there's still a legal controlled substance under federal law. So the state has great interest in, frankly, micromanaging these corporations in Minnesota and restricting their freedom of action even with related corporations. And that's exactly what the plain language of the statute does. And that's why, because of the subject matter, the Copperwell Doctrine and the Fogey case don't apply. I'd be candid. I don't think it's as much about the idea of a corporate structure and one board or another board and maybe some different players. It's more of the subject matter that prohibits the Copperwell Doctrine from being applied here. I mean, that's my broader argument.
What do you mean by subject matter?
Meaning the subject matter here is different than what was being dealt with in Copperwell and even in Fogey, which was basically a civil case that implicated RICO. It's basically still a competitive practices case. Copperwell's limited by its language as well as its progeny to antitrust cases, and that's why, despite Mr. Ang's protestations, I didn't go into a dissertation on each of those cases' factual distinctions from what we have before us today. Well, because those are regulating a completely different thing, and so we need to look at the regulations in Minnesota. I'm sorry.
You finish your answer.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And the nature of those regulations, and especially looking at the medical marijuana laws read together, that gives light and sheds light into the statutory interpretation of 152.33 subdivision 1, which is the criminal act that defendants are charged with. Again, that shows.
Do we even need to look at the intent, though, of the statute, if we just all we need to do is look at the plain language?
I don't think you do, but I don't think it hurts to mention that if you look at other aspects of the medical marijuana laws, it reinforces what I'm arguing the plain language is, which is Vireo, New York, is a person, and it is a separate person. And I think looking at especially the regulatory provision of the statutes under 152.29 further reinforce the idea that these are not and cannot be the same person with the rights to essentially obviate the regulatory laws.
What is the harm in treating them as the same person where you have the same individuals in charge in both companies?
The harm would be that in that situation, Minnesota's restrictions and regulations, again, as long as they're related companies, would be obviated. They could say, well, this is our sister corporation, we're transferring it to ourselves. That's the theory. So we don't have to tell you where the oils are going. And frankly, we're going to process them in New York. Even though 152.29 subdivision 1 says you can only have one place for processing. So the idea is the harm is it would open up a Pandora's box for these related corporations to do as they saw fit in violation of the regulations. And that essentially nullifies the law.
Well, you talked about the subject matter being different, but here both companies are serving the exact same purpose. They're doing the exact same thing. How is it that they're not the same entity then? I mean, they're serving the same function. And you don't have the harm that could be caused when you have that with respect to the Sherman antitrust laws or the RICO laws here. There's no, I mean, it's kind of like, where's the harm?
Well, I think there's a harm in that, again, it would, I think, nullify or gut the regulatory limitations on a company, or on the Minnesota companies that sign up to do medical marijuana. It essentially says, well, if you can find a related company in another state, you don't have to have just one processing facility. And again, then we have oils going to other states that we don't know about. All of a sudden, we have additional distribution facilities generated from marijuana that was cultivated in Minnesota that's supposed to stay in Minnesota to satisfy Minnesota's medical marijuana requirements, because it is a legal enterprise that's designed to deliver care to patients. And so we don't want those things going outside of the state. At least that's what the plain language of the regulations shows.
So there wouldn't be any, they wouldn't have run afoul if they had, if it was just one entity, one corporation, but they had two locations, one in New York and one in Minnesota?
Well, I think they'd still run afoul because you can only process the oils at one location. It doesn't matter whether you, it's a related company, it's one physical location. And so by moving those oils to another location, that being New York rather than the facility in Otsego, that violates 152.29 subdivision 1.
Could you respond to the appellant's argument that that because that under the rule of lenity, this is a new law and these were the same people in both companies, and that the implementation of Minnesota Statute 152.33, Subdivision 1A, actually makes this prosecution an ex post facto punishment?
Right. I actually think the opposite is true, although I do think that the statutory lenity argument, frankly, is the better argument here in terms of appellant's position. But when you look at 1A, it doesn't correct anything. What it shows is that the facts in this case were a crime under Subdivision 1 when it occurred. 1A does not say you can no longer transfer oils out of Minnesota. Rather, it's an additional deterrent in addition to any other penalty at law, and it has that language, in addition to any other penalty at law. Essentially, the legislature finds out this happened. They know that the civil fines are limited to $1,000 at the time under Subdivision 6 of 152.33. And so even though there's a criminal provision already in existence, that fine is so de minimis given the nature of the violation. They essentially up the ante if you're going to do it again. But importantly, no other provision of the medical marijuana laws was changed. They did not further define person to reject a Copperwell doctrine application. They did not amend Subdivision 1, the criminal provision, in any way. But what they did add is 1A, and it says if you are convicted of a transfer under Subdivision 1, now we can fine you $250,000 and we can try to essentially pull your license right away rather than waiting for its expiration. So what does that tell us? It actually reinforces the idea, because there's a conjunctive aspect, you can't get to the license and a hefty financial penalty until there's a crime. That means this was a crime from the inception of the statute. What they're doing is just adding more penalty and remedy provisions for the state. Otherwise, if it wasn't a crime, they would have gone in and changed the language, talked about different definitions for person. So I actually think the statute as amended is further evidence about the statutory interpretation I'm advancing, that there was, in fact, notice. Person is defined as a corporation. The oils were transferred to Vireo in New York, which is a corporation, a person, for processing. That violates 152.29 subdivision 1 as well. And that Copperweld, again, does not apply here because that's a different, that's an antitrust case without the same type of concerns. Copperweld is not a magic wand. Certainly the doctrine may apply in other areas of law than antitrust, but it doesn't have to, and it doesn't here based on the statutory structure of Minnesota's medical marijuana laws. The only other thing I wanted to point out, too, is in terms of the statutory, you know, the Lanty argument is the statutes at the time as well, 152.33 subdivision 6 talks about there can be a $1,000 fine that shall be imposed for violation of the regulations within Minnesota medical marijuana laws. And again, it says in addition to any other applicable penalties at law. So it does not make a fine or other maybe administrative remedies the exclusive penalty. In fact, it says the opposite. And that's why I'm in the position of looking at the statute and reaching the inevitable conclusion that the Copperwell Doctrine cannot apply. And essentially, that's an affirmative step they're asking for here. I mean, right? Person is defined. It's a corporation. It's Vireo. Why does the Copperwell Doctrine overcome that definition and make them one person versus separate persons? Because on its face, they start as separate persons, unless the court believes that you're going to transfer the doctrine in Copperweld to here.
Well, I think the Foggy decision actually takes the opposite route in terms of the assumption, in terms of whether or not it's a separate legal entity or not. I mean, it says that there must be a greater showing that the parent, there is, it was, and also in Copperfield, it was parent and subsidiary. It wasn't subsidiary and subsidiary. But it was a 100% wholly owned subsidiary. And in Foggy, they said there must be a greater showing that the parent and subsidiary are distinct than the mere fact that they are separate legal entities. So it seems to take the assumption that, you know, you can't assume that they're separate legal entities when you've got a parent and subsidiary.
And understanding that, Your Honor, I would say then if that is the starting point under Foggy versus the Copperfield cases, I would still say then the state could overcome that based on the nature of the regulations here and the language in Minnesota's medical marijuana laws that show that Copperfield application doesn't fit.
Well, that's Copperfield. What about Foggy, though? Why wouldn't Foggy apply then?
Well, I think, again, Foggy is also dealing with a completely different concern here. First of all, it implicates the RICO statute, which is federal, which is uniform, right? It applies to everyone in all 50 states. Here we've got distinct state statutes that apply to regulating a Minnesota industry and constricting it. So I think the subject matters distinguish it sufficiently that Foggy's rationale doesn't apply.
You talked about you thought the rule of lenity was probably the strongest argument. And why isn't... I think there's a certain sense with the rule of lenity of, does this really make sense? Given that, when you look at the statute, doesn't it lead to an absurd result?
I don't understand the question. The absurd result being that the corporate agents are being charged in this case, or that the...
Right, the liability that results under the statute because of the interpretation of what you're arguing what a person is and what a person qualifies as under the statute.
Right. I don't think it leads to an absurd result given the sufficiently clear nature of the regulations, the way that the statutes are spelled out and the restrictions on these corporate agents. So essentially, again, when reading the statutes together, 152.29 subdivision 1 makes it absolutely clear these corporate agents can only have this processed at one place, these oils. That's in Otsego, Minnesota. They're on notice. And that's, again, why I reached this inevitable conclusion that I believe this is, in fact, a criminal act in this case. It's a tough situation. Don't get me wrong. And I understand. These are not people who are trying to have these oils hit the open market. That's not what this is about at all. But it's not absurd to hold them criminally liable, given that they transferred it to another person, that being a corporation as defined. All that language is in the plain language of the statutes. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Nelson. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Well, I think I'll join the strategy of my friend and colleague from Wright County, and we'll talk about the amended statute first, which he claims is the stronger argument. It may well be for the court. But what the legislature tried to do here is clarify and give ample warning of what could and could not be done in light of this case. Remember, there are only two manufacturing facilities in Minnesota. There are only two companies by the authorizing statute. And one is Vireo, and another one's owned by the Bachman family. And the only one that's ever been charged with this offense is our case. And thus, it's reasonable to assume that the legislature added 1A to give ample warning that in the future, let there be no ambiguity about a transfer to outstate Minnesota by anyone. And the legislature has clarified what we believe was an ambiguity. Otherwise, there is no purpose whatsoever in initiating or enacting Section 1A to Minnesota Statute 15233. None. And so it answers...
Provide for a fine up to $250,000.
Which so does get your attention.
Doesn't that expand the fines that were otherwise authorized under 1?
Well, if it were just a fine, that would be perhaps a modification of the statute. But to say, to include the words outside of Minnesota in subdivision 1A,
isn't 2... couldn't it be interpreted to that the legislature was... specifying that for making it clear that if you transfer cannabis outside of the state, you're going to be subject to even greater penalties. Not that you weren't subject to penalties before, but now we're going to put in statute even greater penalties.
Well, I think it gives you fair notice instead. The penalties obviously increase, I agree with you, but it does give you fair notice now that any kind of conduct that involves outstate of Minnesota, no matter if it's the person who's related to the person who's related to the person under our theory, is going to result in this kind of fine. And so a notice was finally given, clarifying what was absent from the statute. And if you look at your Wood decision that came out in January, which was the law review type treatise on statutory interpretation, it's not a mere modification. It adds specific language that frankly addresses our case. The other...
Well, could you address respondents' argument about Section 152.29, Subdivision 1?
That's the provision that permits the manufacturer?
Correct. And his argument that the proper interpretation of that statute is that you can only have one processing facility in there. And so to allow... your interpretation would be contrary to that interpretation.
Well, I disagree. The statute is being amended as we speak, though, in the legislature, by the way, to increase the number of facilities. But that's beside the point today, I guess. But the statute said, look, in Minnesota, you can, this company, Vireo, has the license to have one facility in Otsego, Minnesota, to manufacture the cannabis oil. And that's exactly what happened here. This was an alleged transfer after it was manufactured. But there was a single facility. They've complied with the law for the single facility easily. I didn't answer your question. I think I tried.
No, thank you. Okay. No, that's, go ahead. Thank you.
I would like to echo your thought, Judge Reyes, on the expansive nature of copper weld. It's not just about antitrust, I think. For my money, the most interesting decision is Mount Pleasant, Iowa versus Associated Electric. The court erred in saying that there were no Eighth Circuit decisions. There are Eighth Circuit decisions expanding copper weld. This one's the best one, I think, because it's written by Judge Arnold, who was the iconic judge in the Eighth Circuit and was one step away from the Supreme Court had not he been ill. He was almost going to be appointed by President Clinton, but he was the gold standard in that court, and he does expand. He says copper weld reaches, quote, beyond its bare results. And then he talks about how entities cannot conspire with each other if they have common interests, which is true, and that the interests are not separate from the group itself, and they join together. And, you know, the practical, pragmatic thing is that in one day in the life of these distinguished people, they join together in the delivery of product from one company to the other that they both owned. And it is one arm to the other, frankly. And to say this is a criminal case is really unfortunate. It is essentially a regulatory case.
Could I ask you, you're asking us to expand the law?
No, I think we should answer. I'm asked, the question is important and doubtful. And all we're saying is that under the facts of our question that was certified is that when employees are acting at the behest of jointly owned companies, there is no transfer because they are essentially transferring one to the other. That's the question.
But you're asking us to expand Copperwell, the rationale in Copperwell to this case.
I'm saying apply the rationale rather than expand. Well, I like apply the rationale better than expand copper well. It's not an antitrust case, but the metaphor is true.
If we applied that same rationale here, wouldn't that be a matter of first impression as to this statute?
That's correct too, yeah. I mean the
and do we as a error correcting court have the right to make
I think you do. It's a de novo review. And the statute we've asked because we are troubled by the meaning of the statute for you to decide this. And if not you, then the Supreme Court. But we're here now, we like a dis-